Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Promoting peace, liberty, and prosperity around the clock. LibertyTalk.fm.
Welcome to Living in the Solution with Dr. Elena George. Today we have an important show, one that I think is very timely, that everybody who is living in this time and age can understand and relate to, and that's about money. And I know that, I don't know how you want to put it, but things are getting more interesting in terms of being able to pay your bills and able to pay your rent and all sorts of things that are that have been, I think, a lot of pressure put on people. And I think how we handle it energetically is very important. It's something that everybody's involved with, and I'm not sure we all think about it in the same way. And I wanted to have somebody come on who can speak about this and put a different spin on it. We're going to speak today with Mr. Bob Wheeler. He has a personal crusade to empower others to achieve financial freedom, and it stems from his 30 years as a CPA. By combining financial expertise with emotional insights, he created a groundbreaking approach to personal finance in his book, The Money Nerve. He's passionate about using humor and heart to help people gain awareness of how emotions influence financial decisions. And his quest to build a healthy relationship with money has led him to the world of stand-up comedy and satire, where he is the CFO of the world-famous Comedy Store. Now, Mr. Wheeler, I wanted to start off one by welcoming you to the show, because I don't think humor is one thing that people think about when they think about it. It's really quite stressful. So please tell me, how did you turn the energy on that?
Well, first of all, it's great to be here. You know, the interesting thing is I've always used humor as a way to diffuse a situation. And when I work with people around money, even just doing people's taxes, a lot of times tax sessions turn into therapy sessions. And so being able to use humor as a way to help people see something that they might have a blind spot on in a way that doesn't make them bad or shamed, but in a way that I can be playful and help point something out so that they can decide if they want to make a shift.
I think that takes a lot of the stress out of it. I mean, one of the things I'm looking at your website, and people can go there to themoneynerve.com. You mentioned in your story about we all have an embarrassing story regarding money. I think that's probably true, but what have you seen? And I mean, you must have some stories to tell, I would think.
Yeah, well, you know, it's so funny because most of us spend all of our time trying to present well. So we're trying to control the narrative. So we don't want to have those embarrassing moments. We don't want anybody to see us at less than our best. And so, you know, me personally, I've had several situations that are always like, ugh, really? And being able to let people know, you know, I once had probably more than once, but I had somebody say, you must be judging me and be really disappointed in my behavior because you're so knowledgeable on all of this. And I said, actually, I can actually be right there with you and sympathetic because I've been on the same journey. It's just a lot of professionals don't want to admit that they've had their missteps. And so being able to say, look, I'm there with you. Let's all figure it out. This too shall pass.
So when you talk about emotions and financial decisions, you just mentioned we want to present a front. I mean, I remember when I was much, you know, younger, people were always talking about keeping up with the Joneses. And what percentage do you think is that I just want to, you know, appear that I'm financially flush, as opposed to, is it something to present, or do people actually really think that it gives them worth to have money?
Well, so it's a couple of things. One, there's a very high percentage. All of us want to fit in. All of us want to seem like we're relevant and that we matter. And that's just on a personal level. We all want to matter. We all want to be seen. And so, you know, I don't know if it's 80 or 90%. It's a pretty high percentage. But I think most of us, like, we want to look the best. And most of us, even if we say we don't, we are comparing ourselves to other people. We are checking in to see if we're you know, making the mark if we're ahead of the game. We're all doing it unconsciously, and we're looking for indicators to tell us, yeah, I'm ahead, or, oh, I'm not. And many of us actually think that our self-worth is determined by our net worth. And so there is a lot of shame of, I'm not enough, I didn't measure up. Maybe our parents, unfortunately, told us you're never going to amount to anything. And then we took that on and believed it. And so we're all operating, many of us are operating from this place of, I need to be more than what I am. And if we can all just learn to say, wow, I'm enough, just like I am, we'd all be a lot calmer and a lot happier, I'm sure.
So you're really saying, from what I'm taking, is we need to be empathetic and compassionate with ourselves. And we need to look inside to figure out what's driving us sometimes to make some not wise decisions and to forgive ourselves.
Absolutely. That is so important. You know, we are our biggest critics. And a lot of the stuff that we're operating with is information we got when we were 4, 5, 6 years old. We're operating with outdated software, and we need to update our programming. And I think it's so important that we create safe spaces so that we can have non-judgment and non-shaming as we explore what our relationship with money is, because most of us could probably find some space where we need forgiving to ourselves.
And I assume you work with all age groups, and you know, we're talking about the young professional, people who are just out of college, and people who've retired. I mean, this economy has been really, I would think, damaging on a lot of people. I've had seniors that I've taken care of in my practice who've gone back into the workforce where they were retired. How much, from an emotional standpoint, and let's start off with the seniors, how does that jibe with, you think you're done, you've done everything you can to put yourself in good stead, and now you've got to go back in?
Well, you know, I think what's been frustrating for a lot of people is the rules changed, right? I did my time. I hit all my marks. I did what I was supposed to. Theoretically, I'm done. I get to coast. And the economy, just the world, the way things have changed, it's just not that way anymore. And I think there's a lot of frustration with, I followed the rules. It's not fair that they changed the rules on me. And emotionally, financially, it's overwhelming. All of a sudden, I have to go back to work. All of a sudden, I've got to make sure I've got a monthly income. I just can't coast on my Social Security or my pension. And I think there's just a lot of frustration that a lot of people, hey, I followed the rules and I still came up short.
I think let's backtrack then to the young folks. I mean, what are they saying? I mean, when we were just entering the workforce, Social Security was solvent. And right, there was this idea of, I pay my 401k, I've done my time, and I have something to look forward to. As young people, do you see that they think that way, or they're already dubious about what they're putting in and what they're going to get out?
Well, you know, it's interesting. I would say, you know, the majority, it's overwhelming. How am I supposed to get ahead? Nothing's affordable. Mom and dad, everybody else owes us. And I have seen that a lot where even with my own family, you know, we should get a monthly salary, and we should all get free housing, and we should get all these things that people owe us. And they don't fully understand. And maybe that comes from having had a really much better life than a lot of us that struggled and came forward. And so there's this, you owe me, you owe me. But I've also met some young people, and I think in their cases, it's easier to get ahead, who are focused, who have ambition, who have goals, and they just go in with a vengeance. And so I've seen both. I mean, I would say the majority that I've seen have been more like, you owe me, it's too hard, life is rough. But I see other young folks out there just going, this is my opportunity, I'm going to take it.
That's a great attitude. And I would think that serves people who have left the market workforce and come back in. That same attitude would serve them as well.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, and I think that's, if we can get past the overwhelm, if we can slow down, breathe a little, check in with ourselves and figure out what works for me, what's my capacity, so that I'm not overwhelming my system, and then go for it. And I think for some people, it's easier to just say, I think I'm going to bury my head in the sand and I'm not going to look at things. But clearly that doesn't get you very far when we just ignore it.
I think it gets you a lot of anxiety.
Yeah.
Nothing else.
Definitely. Definitely.
So from your, how you approach it when you're seeing a client, is it that you have to turn that switch for them, that it's about opportunity? It's about, you know, if you are senior, learning new tricks so that you can come back in and do things that you love. Maybe you worked and you couldn't stand what you were doing for 20, 30 years. Now here's your chance to do something that you absolutely love and make money on it. Is it that type of emotional switch that you're able to turn on with people?
Well, it is, but I think where I start first is I want to know their story. Do they have any limiting beliefs? Do they have a belief of everybody but me can get there, or I'm not smart enough? So I want to start with what historically have they come to believe? What are those absolute statements that they have internally? And let's bring them out into the open. Because once I become aware of their limiting beliefs, I'm not good enough, I'm not smart enough, I'm not educated enough. Once we can get past that, then we can turn on to what do you want? And then how can we make that happen? And the biggest question that I ask everybody is this: what, why, what? What do you want? Why do you want it? Why don't you have it? What are you willing to do to get there? Because once we can address those four questions, anything is possible if we're willing to self-reflect and do the work.
It's always about the work, isn't it? Nothing is.
It is.
But that mindset, you know, again, going back to the younger generation, you mentioned that someone did it to me and you owe me kind of mentality. Are you able to turn that mindset into, I have to take responsibility, personal responsibility, and I drive the train as opposed to something always happening to me?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it's interesting. A couple of different situations. I was working with a couple of different people who were showing me their net worth and all this stuff. And they had in their inheritance from grandpa and grandma, inheritance from mom, and they had all these assets that weren't theirs. And without being judgy, I just was able to say, well, what happens if grandpa and grandma need all that for medical and now it's gone? And what if mom loses the business and now mom and dad don't have any money? Maybe we want to not count those assets until they're actually in your bank. And they were like, oh, that's all right. Well, that's a good point. I didn't think about that. And so that was one thing. I was working with this group in a workshop separately where all these people had come together. They had goals. They wanted these things. But it also turned out what they had in common was they were all living in an area where they were trying to beat the system so they could get free health insurance and all these different things. And so I said, well, how are you ever going to be able to have financial abundance if you have to keep staying below the radar to get all these freebies? And there was a mind shift there when they realized, oh, wow, I can't really have both. I can't stay below the radar, look for freebies, and then go out and expect financial abundance. And not that either one is right or wrong. It's about what do I actually want and how does that serve me?
That's a different mindset. That really puts you into a positive mode because it's not what you don't have. It's what you can gather and
right.
What tools you have to use to get there. I think that puts people, it pulls them away from this helplessness. And we're going to take a break in a minute, but I want to ask that question when we come back. How much does feeling helpless drive this? So let's take our first break. You're living in the solution. Welcome back to Living the Solution. We're speaking with Mr. Bob Wheeler. And before the break, I was curious to find out, how do we jog the younger generation out of this mindset that the government needs to take care of me, I'm owed something, and I can live with a literally sustainable income and sustainable financial life. But how do we get them to understand that that's really basic. And if you're really trying to gather and to grow and have a future, that that's not really the way you want to go about it.
Yeah, that's a great question. And I do think that for a lot of young people and maybe older people, there, you know, there's this continuous negative, uncontrollable, we can't control the world, money is impossible, never get ahead, housing is expensive. It starts to spiral. And for me, it's to take a pause, start to put things in digestible bites so that we can take in the information and not do it all at once, because that's overwhelming. For me, there's a cost benefit in being a victim or in our current story. And what I always want to do is find out what's that benefit, right? Oh, I don't have to take responsibility. I can blame other people. I don't have to really look at anything. But the cost may be, you know, my passion, my soul, self-judgment, thinking that I'm not doing enough. And so what I try to do is give people the tools to start to see, hey, we can't fix everything, but let's start with A, B, and C over here. Let's just work from those little things, and let's just try and get from A to B, and we'll get B to C, instead of trying, everybody thinks they've got to get from A to Z. Mm-hmm. And I think social media and all that stuff doesn't help with, you're not there, look at me, I'm amazing, back to that presentation of how we look. And so when I work with people, I try to show them, here's the little places where you do have control, where you can get ahead. And once I can start to get them to see, oh, maybe I can do this, then we can start to create, you know, a plan, a timetable. What do we need to do? And actually set some parameters, because I'll sit with people in a workshop or I'll give a talk and I'll say, you know, who wants to be rich? I do. I want $1 million. I want it right now. And okay, and how much can you start saving? I can put away $10 a week. So it's not realistic, right? There's a disconnect between I want millions of dollars and actually formulating a plan. And so for me, when I can sit with people and start to help them work out the timetable, it's not going to happen tomorrow, but we could do this in a year. We could do this in 2 years. Here's what we're going to do. Here are the steps, and give practical steps. It becomes less overwhelming and less way out there. And it becomes more tangible when I can start to see, oh, I'm going to save $50 a month. It's going to take me 2 years to get to my goal, but I'm moving towards it. Mm-hmm. Versus, oh, it's just this thing out there and I've got to get it to me without any kind of planning, or just mostly just hope that it comes my way, because again, I'm a victim, instead of I'm in control. What are the things that I can do to start changing that?
I would think that mindset changes your relationship with money, and it becomes something that it's always, if you can see the goal and you can see yourself working towards it, it just has something more positive associated with that. It's like not something happening to you, but every choice you make, I would think, is bringing you more towards that goal or away from it. And when it's concrete, you tend to make better choices. Is that how you see it?
Yeah, absolutely. So one of the things I love to do with people is I'll tell them, just start saving $10 a week. $10. Ah, that's nothing. Just start $10 a week. Don't think about it. Just do it. Automatic. Have it automatically taken out of your account. $10. And what typically happens is, okay, they're taking out $10 a week. But about 6 months in, they'll say, oh my God, I've got a couple $100 saved. Or I'll say, well, hey, do you want to get that growing a little bit faster? Yeah, I could do 20. Yeah, I could. Hey, I'm not going to have that meal this week. I'm going to put more money in. Once it becomes real, once they can see it, it actually becomes exciting. You actually go, oh my goodness, I can do this. If we, you know, so creating those tangible results, seeing those tangible benchmarks of, oh, I'm actually getting some traction here. It's super empowering, and it just gets an energy going.
I love that. And from the standpoint of how you save, I mean, do you, and you know, we're dealing with a lot of things with the banks and having it not in your hand. Is it different energy when you save it and you put it in your place, in your home, and under your mattress, so to speak, than keeping it in these virtual centers like the bank where you don't have access to it sometimes?
I think both are good. So for me, when I was first starting out, if it was in my main bank account, I would spend it. And I had to trick myself. And so I created multiple bank accounts and savings accounts and an investment account. And it was just an expense. And I didn't think about it. And I needed it to just be out of sight, out of mind, because I was my own worst enemy. And so that did help. But I would also say it's really, you know, it's fun to put a $100 bill in your wallet, because I tell you, you will not want to spend it. You won't want to spend it, because the minute, most people know this, the minute you spend that $100 bill, you break it, it's all going to just disappear, because now it's just 20s and 5s and 1s. When you've got a $100 bill, you try to protect that for as long as you can, because you feel it. And, you know, I've studied what the wealthy do, and they talk about this, of having this tangible money in your hand, because you feel the pain when it's taken from you versus a credit card. It's the same feeling when you do 10 bucks, 100 bucks, or 1,000 bucks. But if you're taking money out of my wallet, out of my piggy bank, you feel it. And I encourage parents with young kids to have them put money in a glass piggy jar or jar, whatever, and make them carry that to the store, so they get to watch the money go when they want to buy that toy or a piece of candy, and they get to watch it grow when they save, or somebody gives them a birthday gift, or they do chores, or whatever it might be, so that there is that connection to it's something real versus, you know, imaginary.
So from what you just, and I totally agree, I can't really, don't like to spend cash. It just bothers me. But it's a whole nother mindset. Oh, I have another month to pay it, or what, you know, when it's virtual, it's a whole other ball game. But from from the standpoint of our society, it's moving us away from cash, and it somehow has made cash into something not clean. Remember during the pandemic, they were saying, oh, cash has germs on it. You don't want to spend it. You want to use your card because it's safer. That whole mindset was pulling people away from reality. And it probably didn't help a lot of people not to see their money. It just went straight to their bank, straight to whatever vendor they were putting their money in. But there was no value in that to me.
Absolutely. And there are commercials. Why are you using your money? You're slowing up the line. Hurry up. Use a card. Get it. Make it. How fast can we do this? And we don't have any connection with our money, for sure. We're just, it's a thing. It's a thing. One of the things it's interesting related to this and money, when people call me up and tell me, I just got a windfall, I'm going to inherit some money, I just sold this gadget, I'm going to get a bunch of money, the first thing I tell them is, before you spend anything, I want you to just let that money sit in your bank for 30 days. And the majority of the people are like, what? I'm like, I just want you to let it sit in your bank. No, but I got things to put. No, just let it sit in your bank for 30 days. You weren't expecting it before. Let it sit there. And I can tell you, most people are really, really uncomfortable with letting that money just sit there. Most of us have a dollar amount, whether it's not overdrawn, whether it's 100 bucks, whether it's 5,000 bucks, whether it's 100,000, that we're comfortable with. And when our money starts to go above our comfort level, we start getting rid of it. And the more we can get comfortable with it is a tangible thing, and the more we can get used to having it just be around us, the more it will be around us. But we're just taught to pay the bills, get the money out, get the money out. And it's not that I don't want you to pay your bills. Of course I do. That's responsible. But also learning to actually let it sit in your bank account for a few minutes. We don't need to just get it in and get it out. We actually need to let it come in and sort of look around and invite some of its friends in.
So is that a different energy in terms of lack, meaning I have to spend it because I never had it, to the mindset of abundance, where this is just the beginning, there's more coming in, I can sit here and relax and enjoy it to a degree?
Yeah, absolutely. And again, it's important to pay your bills. They don't need to be paid 2 seconds after you get the bill, right? And it doesn't, I've got to make sure that I don't hold anybody up at the grocery store. I got to make, like, there's this panic. There's this anxiety to don't make anybody else have to wait, or don't inconvenience anybody because my inability to handle my money. So for me, the more we can learn to, oh yeah, there's money here, I can handle things in a calm, relaxed state, where I can breathe instead of choked up, anxious, get it done, get it done, get it done. Hurry, hurry, hurry. We, most of our money is already spent before it even lands in our bank account. And if we could just learn to slow that piece down and let it just linger in the account for a little bit before it goes off and does all its wonderful things that it does for us, but to just learn to appreciate that it's coming in, not that it's got to get going as soon as possible.
I like that. And so when someone has their own business, and that, I mean, that mindset is, because I'm an entrepreneur, so to me, the that mindset is much easier to take on when you have something, money coming in routinely, you know, every 2 weeks. What about when people are on their own and they have to make that leap and they have to go out on faith and they have to trust in themselves and God in themselves that they're going to stay open? How does that mindset, or well, let's stop, let's take a step back. Is there a mindset that you find that people are able to do that versus people who I need to be comfortable. I need to make sure there's money coming in. What's your take on those two emotions towards being able to just go out on faith?
Yeah, no, well, it's a great question. And I think it's so important to actually know yourself, right? Because like I can tell you, I've hired many, many CPAs in my tax practice that went out on their own for about 20 days. And then they went right back to getting a paycheck, because a lot of accountants are great accountants, but they're not great business people. And it's a different animal. And so I was amazed at how many people thought, yeah, I can just do this. I think you want to have a plan, whatever that plan is. I want to make sure I've got $50,000 in the bank. I'm going to just wing it with $100. It's your tolerance for anxiety and stress and the unknown. And also, do I trust myself? And you know, some people do, some people don't. Entrepreneurs, man, they are the bravest, right? They're out there in the jungle, in the fields, hoping that it's going to go the way they hoped. And they've got that commitment. But it's definitely a lot more stressful if you don't have a plan, or for a lot of entrepreneurs, knowing when to say it's over, or when do I pivot? Because, well, my ego's involved in this, or I've got sunk costs. I've already spent the money. So pivoting would mean that I failed. And so it is a different mindset for an entrepreneur who can tolerate the unknown much more than people that like to get that steady paycheck. The rewards are much greater if we're willing to go through the fire of entrepreneurship.
It's definitely, it's got its good points and it's bad.
It does, for sure.
On that note, let's take our second break and come back. You're living in the solution. Welcome back to Living in the Solution. We're speaking about the money nerve, and the people need to go to your website, Mr. Wheeler's website, themoneynerve.com. On that website, I see that there's a quiz about how your emotions impact your finances. How did you come up with that? And what's your take on how people answer it?
Well, the thing is, talking about money and emotions, it's amazing how many people will say to me, emotions have nothing to do with my money. I would go and speak with financial advisors at brokerage houses, and then people would come up and say, oh, I really never made a connection. And so for a lot of people, they do think that money is just very black and white, very shut and closed. It's very 2 + 2 = 4. And there is so much to the emotional piece. Just like when you get a lottery ticket, if you win, you're like, oh my goodness. And you have this euphoric feeling of excitement. If you lose, you're like, there it goes again. I always lose, right? And we're just reaffirming. But emotionally, physically, we feel that. And so for me, it was, how do I get people to start to look at it in a different way? So how can I ask these questions to help people see that there's emotions involved? Because as a tax person, I'm like the dentist. Nobody wants to see me, but they need me. But they certainly, they don't come in running joyfully to look at their money issues. So doing a quiz where it's non-threatening, there's no financial stake involved that I can, oh, okay, let me start to look at these things and see what's going on. Oh, interesting. And so for me, it's just about getting that conversation started. And my whole premise about going into Money and Emotions was really about normalizing conversations around money, letting people know that they weren't alone, and to really just help remove that stigma of shame, because so many people feel like, I didn't do it right, I didn't have the tools, and there's nothing wrong with that. You know now, right? What can we do now? And so for me, the quiz is that first step towards awareness to then start to say, oh, isn't that interesting? I don't like to save, or I'm afraid when I have money, there's too much responsibility, or whatever each of our unique story is. But we all have a story, and that story could be costing us a lot if we're not really willing to look at the story and see where the fiction is.
It's a good point. And it's, I think, very difficult in our society sometimes to be able to be self-reflective, right? It's somehow you don't want to see yourself in the mirror. And that's whole social, you know, social media is a way to present yourself in a way that's most of the time, I don't know, maybe not most, but in too many occasions, not true. It's what you say it is becomes the truth. There is no subterfuge here. You have to look at yourself in the mirror. And question is, how often, and I'm sure it's a lot, but I have to ask it, how often do you see people go from being anxious and feeling not good about themselves to the exact opposite?
Well, I see it a lot. I mean, I do see people wanting to have a different outcome. I do see people wanting to pivot. And so the majority of the people, once they start this journey, even though there's going to be some setbacks and even there's going to be frustrations, most people are excited to make the journey. It's just getting the tools. You know, I was working with this woman and she came to me and said, look, I really want to do these budgets. I really want to get a control of my money. But my husband, you know, he's just not going to get on board and he does this and that. And I said, whoa. You know, if you come at it that way, your husband's probably not going to support you. He's not going to come on board because you're telling him everything he's doing wrong. How about you just make it about you? And maybe you go to your husband and say, hey, I'm really trying to do it different. Would you support me in my journey? She's like, wow, that sounds a whole lot less attacking. Mm-hmm. And what was funny is once she went in with the mindset of, hey, honey, would you support me on my journey of personal transformation? I want it to be different and maybe we'll both benefit from it. Once she did that, he was totally on board. But she'd spent many years coming at him going, you're the reason why we don't have this. And it wasn't, when you're on the defense, most of us are not going to go in and go, yeah, let me help, because I'm defending. And so if we can find the way to get other people to come in and support us and make it about us, make it about our journey. But I see so many people that once they get started, they taste it, and they feel it. But you got to want it. When people come to me, the first question I ask is, are you willing to do the work? And some people have literally said to me, no, I need you to do the work so I can get there. Well, that's the end of that session, because if they're not willing to do the work and they admit it, which is great, they're not willing to hear anything that's actually going to take them away from a different mindset. And so it's a waste of my time and a waste of their time.
This is something that you have to be all in with. It's like, you can't meet you halfway with this. It's first, you have to be honest, you know, it's like your 12 steps. I have a problem. right. And then I need help and I'm willing to work to meet you over halfway, really, to get the help that I need. I mean, that makes perfect sense, honestly.
Look, it's not always fun. I jokingly say when I go into workshops, for my own self-reflection, I go in kicking and screaming. I don't like looking at all my flaws. I don't like looking at my shortcomings and in the places where I like to be in denial. But I do it because I know when I get through it, I'm so much better for it.
I think that's beautifully said. And when people come in and they need your help, what's the main thing that, if you can say, is it credit card debt? Is it student loan debt? Is it a mixture of everything that's gotten them into a situation?
It's a combination. I would say it's mostly credit card debt has really helped people get there. It's people overspending, people not living within their means. And for me, part of that living within my means is learning to have difficult conversations, learning to set boundaries, learning to say, yeah, I can't go out with everybody for drinks tonight. I'm on a budget. And letting go of the shame of, well, I couldn't do this. I couldn't do that. And so I think that's the biggest place is we live outside of our means because we gotta have it. And television tells us we gotta have it. And social media tells us we gotta have it. And I feel less than if I don't. So I'm just going to charge it, or I'm going to tap into my savings, or I'm going to tap into my 401k instead of saying, you know what? That would be fun. That would be nice. But that's not where I am right now. And that's not actually going to serve me. And once we can, I mean, I think to me, that's really, it's the biggest thing, mm-hmm. living within our means. It's so hard for many of us to want to do that.
And we're going to take a break soon, but I'm trying to start the conversation about where do you start? Do you get your smallest bills paid off just as a strategy, or do you get the big ones off?
Yeah. So it's a combination. What I do, I make people write down every credit card they have, the interest rate and the balances. And then what I typically do is if there's three or four small ones, I want to knock them out. So I feel like I got some wins, right? Because part of this is psychological. So I need to get some wins in there. If I'm just going to pay the biggest one and it's 20,000 bucks and I'm going to pay 100 bucks a month, it's going to feel insurmountable. So I want to look at the interest rates, whoever's got the highest interest rates. I want to focus on those. I want to pay off a few small ones, but I want people to get in the habit of just looking at all this stuff without beating themselves up because it took them a while to get there. It's going to take them a while to get out and just start looking at those things. And then we look at bank statements. We look at credit card statements, look for all those reoccurring automated savings or payments. Or, you know, I had a client that had seven different internet services because they weren't paying attention. So just to start going through and looking at your phone bill, what are you getting charged for? Looking at your cable bill, looking at those places where, oh, it's just $5. It's just $7. And then start saying, nope, I don't need that. Oh, I didn't mean to sign up for that. And actually get really conscious about where your money's going.
Those are small things, but after a few months, I'm sure it becomes a huge, you know, even if you, especially if you're not using it, just a drain on your finances. What about things like you mentioned before, eating out? And I don't mean with your friends. I mean getting takeout and having coffee in the morning and things that people do as a routine on their way to work. Is that something that people can think about? Do I really need this?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think every time you spend, you should think, is this in service to me? Is this in service to my goals? If my goal is buying a house, saving for a house, buying a house, every time I go out and buy drinks, is this in service to me? So I think it's a great question to ask yourself. But I do think, you know, with the eating out piece, I have several clients who just were not paying attention, right? The money's coming in. I have a client, they eat out 7 days a week, three meals a day. And I showed them what they were spending and they were like, that's a lot of money. I'm like, you just, you know, redid your kitchen. How about starting to learn how to make some food and save some of that money? And for them, it was a big number, so they really got shocked. Now, I had a couple that was trying to save towards a certain amount for retirement. And what they did was during the pandemic, every time they would have a meal at home, they would figure out what it would have cost them at a restaurant, and they would put that into a savings account. They saved up almost $100,000 in the course of 1 year because they were just going out all the time. And they realized, we actually like staying home, hanging out, and not having to deal with all the expense. But it was just sort of their lifestyle. They'd just gotten used to it. So it was just a readjustment. And much happier and healthier when they're making their own meals.
Well, yeah, there's so much positive with that because you're not getting all the stuff they put in this fast food.
That's absolutely.
From a medical standpoint, a total win. I mean, these are small things that people can do. From what you're describing, it's not this overwhelming, I need to turn my whole life over in order to make a change. These are actually right. easy things. And I like from a psychological standpoint, you just describe having a win and having that. Mm-hmm. It's almost like dopamine, isn't it? It's like you get a high from it.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's why, that's what's so interesting is if people actually stopped and took a moment and formulated a plan, all right, I'm going to do a little bit of savings. I'm going to pay down a little bit extra on my debt. I'm going to live within my means and actually just plotted out some, here's the things that I'm going to do, some steps. It changes pretty significantly, pretty quickly, if you stay consistent.
It's actually very doable. And from an emotional standpoint, it's like, I can get control over this. And to me, that's at least from a medical standpoint, I'm sure it's everything else. When something seems overwhelming, you just don't want to do it, or you just don't want to face it. And it'll go away if you just not deal with it.
Yeah, absolutely. I wish.
I know, right? If you can just snap your fingers, it'd be awesome. On that note, let's take our last break. You're living in the solution. Welcome back to Living Solution. We're speaking with Mr. Bob Wheeler. And are you seeing new clients? How can people reach you? And do they have to live in the same state that you're in?
No. So we're always always open to new people, new clients. A lot of the work I can do over Zoom. It's interesting. Some of my tax clients became money coach clients, and people that were money coach clients became tax clients because they feel like they're in a place where we're not going to judge them. We really try to create a safe space. But a lot of stuff since the pandemic is just done on Zoom. And so I do a lot of sessions on Zoom. I mean, I enjoy being live and in person, but that's not always possible for everybody. And I work with people in different countries and different time zones. And, you know, I like working with people that are committed to, I want to do it different. They don't have to do it perfect. They can make lots of mistakes. That's all welcome. It's, am I willing to step in, get uncomfortable, look at my past, and make some changes for the future? Again, without shame, with lots of compassion and lots of empathy for ourselves and lots of curiosity. Wow, isn't that interesting? I really liked that narrative of being a victim. That's so interesting, right? Mm-hmm. Non-judgment.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. And from the standpoint of, you talked about credit card debt, and I guess the student loan debt is something that some of us are dealing with forever. But what about homes versus renting? You know, there's this mindset that if you own your home, you can write off the taxes, and it's an investment. It's something that you're building up in equity. Is that absolutely true, or does it make sense to rent these days?
Well, I mean, both can be true. And again, it goes back to what is my personal need and want. Certainly having real estate, it can grow in value and it can be amazing. But if you don't have the resources when the water line bursts or when the new roof has to be, put on because the roof is collapsing, if you don't have the money and the resources to take care of those things, a house is just going to take you out pretty quick. Some people that want to own, I'll suggest to them, even though I don't like paying HOAs and stuff like that, a condo may be a better place where somebody else is taking care of all the physical stuff. You're not a good gardener. You're not handy. But if you're somebody that kind of stuff is going to stress you out, or you're not sure where your next dollar is coming from, it may be in your best interest to rent something where you know you've got a budget and you know what to expect. You know if anything breaks, it's taken care of. For me, I always wanted to have a place that I owned so nobody could tell me that I had to leave. And I don't know where that came from, but I was just like, nobody's telling me I have to leave. I just want to have my own space. And for a lot of people, though, the responsibility, it may be too much. And a lot of, I think this was true for me, but, my parents didn't, teach me how to become a homeowner or all the things that were going to come with it. I guess they just figured I'd figure it out like they did. And fortunately, some of it I did. But for a lot of people, we're just not equipped. We didn't get the skill set. And so I think it's best before you just go out and buy a home because somebody told you to do it, is look up the pros and cons of owning a home. Look at the cost of a home in your neighborhood, in your area, and then figure out what best fits you individually, not what all your friends are doing. Because I know lots of people that have jumped on the buy a house bandwagon only to have lots of regret.
That's a good point. And that also segues into having a car. I know business owners sometimes will lease them because it's a tax write-off. But is there value in buying your car as opposed to leasing your car?
So when I work with clients and they'll say, do I buy or lease? My question is, and I live in LA, so people always have to have a new car because they got to present. If you need to have a new car all the time, you're probably better off leasing because you're never really going to get the benefit of owning a car. But if you look on it, put it down on pen and paper, owning a car, paying it off, not having car payments for a while, and you have something you can sell that still has value, hands down, buying a car financially much, much better than leasing. But if I've got a client that just filed bankruptcy, if I've got a client who has to have a new car every year, I have a client that can't quite afford to purchase, then leasing might be the best way. And I've seen in more recent years where people will lease a car for 3 years, then it comes down in value, and then they'll buy it at the end of the lease so that it, even though they're paying more than they would have if they just bought it, mm-hmm. they're finding a way that works for them. So, you know, hands down, owning a car makes the most financial sense over time, but because of people's different circumstances, sometimes leasing does make more sense.
Makes sense. And for those who, you know, we talked about a lot of different ownership avenues. What about if you are living in a city situation and you have to have roommates? I mean, that seems to be kind of a norm these days with the younger set. Is that some, and I mean, it's kind of a out there kind of question, but if you have to do that, is there a way that you can, because it's about money, really, are you able to save in those situations, or do you find that it's still living among, you know, above your means to need to have a roommate in order to have what you want?
No, it's interesting. I'm seeing more young people do this, and I've got a few younger clients that have done that. They've gone out and bought a house, and they bought a house that was way beyond what they needed, but they got two or three roommates, and those two or three roommates are paying their mortgage. And even when the pandemic hit or when the strike hit and they lost their income as a entertainer, they had all these other people helping pay their mortgage. The thing is, it goes back to what's comfortable for you. Some people don't like sharing space. If you can handle other people living in your space, even if it's a short term, I saw this great video. This kid was living in his van. He was working at one of the big software companies, and he was making six figures, and he was living in his van. Everybody's like, what are you doing? He said, well, look, I'm young. I can live out of my car for the next 3 years and just bank all this money. When I'm older, I'm not going to want to put up with these kinds of things, or I'm not going to want to have a roommate. And so it's about how much does this impact my lifestyle, and how much do I really want to have a house? Because if I really want to have a house, I'll have 10 roommates for a couple of years, knowing that down the line, I'm going to get ahead.
So it's about your age and what you're willing to, the risk that you're willing to take, I guess. It comes down to that as well. Okay.
Absolutely.
So from the standpoint of those, we talked about people who aren't in bankruptcy. What's your strategy for those who have to claim bankruptcy? How do they climb out of that? Is there a method that they should use or a strategy?
Well, for me, look, bankruptcy was written to help get people out of situations. So for me, when clients say to me, I'm so ashamed that I'm doing this, well, bankruptcy was created to help people out of situations. that are just untenable, that you've gotten so far behind. It makes sense. Now, I don't, when somebody comes to me, I want to make sure that they've got some debt. If they tell me, well, I've got $10,000 worth of debt, bankruptcy isn't really going to do anything. Like, yeah, it'll take, but it's going to be on your record. It's going to take a while. To me, it's got to be a real situation where, you know, I've got $100,000 worth of debt. I've got all these people coming at me. I'm never going to get ahead. So again, I want to look at the numbers and see, wait, maybe there's a way that I can do some debt consolidation. Maybe there's some ways we could negotiate, get some of this forgiven. And maybe we don't need to do bankruptcy. For me, there's nothing wrong with doing bankruptcy. And when clients decide to go in that direction, I want to make sure it's actually the best thing for them, not just a quick fix. Because I have seen, I've had a couple of clients use bankruptcy as their way of swiping, wiping everything clean every 10 years. And then they start building up again. And in 10 years, I'll just file another bankruptcy. That's probably not the best mindset. Mm. And for me, it's like I would only want to use it as a tool to start with a clean slate and then change my behavior so that I don't get back in that situation going forward.
Gotcha. Now, in the few minutes that we have left, I wanted to ask more about your workshops. They are very, they're comprehensive, and it seems like you have a workshop for whoever, whatever the person needs, which sounds, it looks really cool. How can people find out more about the workshops and sign up for them?
Well, they can definitely go to the website. If there's a specific topic that people want to work with, they can always send us an email and go, hey, are you doing anything right now on difficult conversations? Are you doing anything on the emotions of money? And we're always, you know, sometimes like I'll get called, somebody will put together 20 people and I'll go to Portland and I'll do a workshop with a group of people or with the strike. We had a workshop for actors and just covered a lot of different things. But there's so many pieces to, you know, financial wealth because it's mental. It's not just all how many dollars do I have. It's what are my relationships? Are they rich? Are my human experiences traveling? Are they rich? Are they abundant? And it's not just do I have lots and lots of money. So we do like to cover all those things. But I like for me right now, the biggest focus that I've been working with people is having those difficult conversations, setting boundaries, not feeling the need to have to bring everybody with them when they have success. But they're very experiential. And I've got a background in somatic therapy, body-based therapy. And so a lot of the stuff we do is actually you can experience the stuff in, you know, in your body, which helps you remember a little bit more as opposed to just talking about it or talking at people. It's very experiential.
I love that because that's how people change their behavior, right? It's mind and body. If you feel good, you're going to do it.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And how can people buy your book?
Probably the best place is Amazon. You can get it on Amazon and we have it on the website. The ebook is a great way to get it inexpensively. And it's a great tool if you're in partnership with, if you've got kids, if you've got a partner, your parent, it's a great book to sit and actually go through. There's calls to action at the end of each chapter and it explores and asks questions about your own money mindset. And it's great to sort of share that with your partner, with your kids to see where everybody's at and to actually just hear different points of view.
Mr. Wheeler, I want to thank you so much for joining me today. It was a wealth of information. And I think, again, a call to action in a way that makes that's non-threatening, right? That you just created this. Well, I can do that. Just small little things that I can do. And every step you take, it's from what you just described for this show, it's going to put you closer to freedom, emotional freedom, abundance. And really, I think once you're not in that space of desperation, that's about living, your life in a positive way.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And to me, it still goes back to the what, why, what. What do I want? Why do I want it? Why don't I have it? What am I willing to do to get there? And if you can focus on those things, it'll help you figure out a map, figure out a plan, and let you live your best life.
I think that's a great place to stop. I love that. Again, thank you so much for joining me. You were just a pleasure to interview.
Well, thank you so much. And I hope people glean some information from this and make some positive steps in their lives.
Me too. And thank you. And thank you, everybody, for living in the solution.
Revolutionary Talk for Revolutionary Times. Liberty Talk Events.